Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Oh shit, we are recording. Fair enough.
Yeah, we are recording. Is everyone set and ready?
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what I noticed?
What did you notice?
Just a completely off-the-cuff thing while we're all getting settled. Do you know when... So on the Manchester Derby, when Gary Neville is co-commentating, and when something really exciting happens slightly unexpectedly, Gary Neville will just start making this noise like, oh, yeah. It's like he's like some sort of weird Manc air ride siren. You can imagine,
is it like the natural evolution of his goalgasm from the Camp Nou?
That was unbelievable.
He
peaked then, really, quite literally.
Let's just start doing
like
that.
A man's ghost.
maybe in time, if Andy makes a really exciting point, I'll just go, oh.
I look forward to that. I won't feel undermined at all by that. Right, are you set?
Yeah.
Right,
so good.
Cool. So much is changing at the moment in the world, as well as the world of football, that I don't think we need to worry about that normal thing where we sit around and think, oh, the minute we've left the studio, this will happen, or that will have changed. There's really no point. It's been a really bizarre Champions League week with two games behind closed doors, two games with fans. We all know how we felt seeing the games that were behind closed doors. But how did you feel seeing the games with fans in the situation that we're in and the world's in? To me, that almost felt weirder.
I think surreal is the only word for it. Everything just doesn't feel normal right now, whether it be inside sport, outside of sport, or we just feel like we're living in a different universe sort of thing at the moment.
It's true. And Lars, of course, the weirder twist with, oh, I suppose it's not weird, it's natural that it should happen straight away, but the games at Valencia and Paris Saint-Germain, even though they were without fans, they were with fans outside.
Yeah, which is a frustrating thing to see, I think.
It is.
Maybe it's ignorance. I mean, but I also feel I'm in two minds about this, because if people weren't irrationally obsessed with football, then I think all our careers would be very different and probably a lot less fun. You know, people who spend an inordinate amount of time on football and really put their lives on hold for football is kind of what keeps us in socks and trousers, right? But really, with this sort of thing, like, if the health authorities are saying that to contain this thing so that fewer people will die, we need to not assemble in large groups of people, for you then to immediately go out and assemble in a large group of people. Yeah. I don't. It doesn't sit right with me. And I also think if you look at the pictures from outside the Parc des Princes, like these lads, they're young, strong, healthy lads, I'm sure, and they figured it doesn't find if
it's the same outside Mestalla as well.
And they're probably thinking in the same way young men think that nothing bad will ever happen to them. And you know, if I'm young and strong, it's fine. But it's not about you getting it. It's about the people you'll pass it on to. It's not about any other people with the flares outside Parc des Princes getting it. That'd probably be fine, but their parents or grandparents might not. The shopkeeper down the road who's past 60 might not. Mm. You know, it's this sort of thing. It's about trying to stopping this. I mean, I'm not an epidemiologist. I don't know. I just know that in this situation, it's not a bad idea to follow instructions.
Medical advice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll come to Paris and what happened at the Parc des Princes in a little bit. But I think if we're talking about the football, we have to start with Atletico Madrid knocking out the holders. And it is that extraordinary, isn't it, David? I mean, we talked after the first leg about how people who have a casual understanding of Atletico would have watched that first leg and said, typical Atletico performance. But in fact, it was like a tribute act to Atletico 3 years ago or 4 years ago. But they pulled another one out of the bag here. And we were talking about it before. And, you know, we're trying to find the essence of cholismo, weren't they? Mm-hmm. You know, what embodies Diego Simeone and his teams. And there's this misconception that it's defensive perfection. Mm. But in fact, for Oblak to build himself in his reputation to the best goalkeeper in the world or one of the best goalkeepers in the world, he's had to do a lot of work in the meantime. It was never about that, was it? It was about battening down the hatches, not about never giving any chances away. And that was certainly the case. They rolled back the years again at Anfield, didn't they?
Yeah, it was a real old-fashioned performance in many ways. I think the fact that it was almost a tribute to the old Atleti cast. Mm. And then also the style that they played in, the way that they won that game. It was, you know, let's make that clear, it was no tactical masterclass at all. This wasn't Atleti's unbelievable defensive performance. You know, Liverpool absolutely destroyed them and battered that door down. Something which they didn't do in the first leg, Liverpool. I thought in the first leg, it was a good performance from Atleti defensively. In the second leg, it wasn't. It was so wide open. It was. I think it was a great performance for those people who get sick of hearing about tactics and everything and such. It was very much great determination, passion, resilience, all those words. I know some people, you know, like roll their eyes at that as well. But, you know, I think it was a classic performance in that regard. And I think it was quite refreshing to see.
And I think it's, I mean, we've spoken about it a lot on this pod, in part because Simeone himself has spoken about it, is that there has been such a change there. You know, the old leaders, you know, Gabi's no longer there, Godino is no longer there, or the old sort of, the leaders of the old Simeone team are gone, and then this season is all about finding new leaders in this group and having new players step up to be the sort of flag carriers, not just on the pitch, but in terms of personality, in terms of deal with these sort of situations.
So what does this say about Simeone?
It says a lot about Simeone, but I think it says a lot about this group of players who are sort of making a step up. I mean, it's not just, even though you could say with the slightly less sort of otherworldly goalkeeper, you probably have a different result last night, but these sort of experiences, they build togetherness and they build character and they build belief, and it will make this new group of Atleti players feel that they can achieve similar things to the last one.
I think this was a flash in the pan. I don't see. I mean, if you look at their league performances, you look at how they're going there in La Liga, and I think, you know, I can still see them going out the next round as well. I don't think this is the start of something big, the new Atleti coming around. I do honestly think this is one last dance almost in a way.
But I feel like that's so hard to analyze, because I agree. Yeah. Like, I've watched them quite a bit this season, and they've been really average for a lot of it. Mm. But then that first leg performance of Liverpool, they just kind of raised themselves on the occasion. Mm. And even though, again, they were relying on a good goalkeeper, there was an element of that this week as well.
How big a deal is it, David, that Simeone got Gabi to come and see them a couple of days before?
I love
Because the thing is, what Simeone has always been so incredible at, and he's gone back to the playbook for this, from the moment he arrived, he was always talking about the barrio, the people we represent. We're a working-class team with working-class values. And exactly. Yeah. And that's harder to do once you move from that neighbourhood, isn't it? Once you move like 15 kilometres away or whatever. And when you think about how Simeone, before big Champions League games, has got them to go back and train at the Calderon before it's recently demolished, of course. That idea of... It's almost a Scolari sort of ploy, isn't it? This idea of appealing to emotions rather than tactics.
Yeah. Sometimes that can tip you over the line. I think people sometimes ignore that. Again, going back to what I said, you know, all respect for tactics and statistics and what have you. But I think sometimes people do forget the emotional aspect of it, the mental aspect of it. And I think the players would have taken a lot from that. Simeone has always played in that. And you look at his words after the press in the press conference last night as well. He was talking about soul then. How did you win? Oh, we had soul. And that just goes to show that's the sort of thing that he goes upon. He doesn't go, well, we had this midfielder here. I brought Marcus Llorente on to plug this gap here. Mm. He talks about the emotional aspect, and it's so, so big for him. I thought that's how they got over the line last night. It wasn't to do anything with tactics. It was pure, just grit, and they just really, really dug in.
We'll come back to Marcus Llorente in a minute, but I wanted to ask you, Lars, about Jurgen Klopp. We know he's a bad loser,
sure,
by his own admission, and that's what makes him so good in a way. But this idea of, you know, when he came out and said afterwards, they've got all these players, these great players, why do they have to play like that? When did we get to this point that we think there's only one way of playing football, and good football has to be a certain type of football?
I think there's always been people who've felt that there's a right way of playing football and a wrong way of playing football, right? This is not a new thing. And I think what Klopp is saying specifically is that you have guys who are good ball players who are not playing a lot of ball. Like, they're mainly running around chasing when they could be doing more stuff. I mean, you could put Saul into the Man City team and I don't think he'd look out of place. Like, he has the technical quality to play for a much more possession-focused team.
He's the one player that stands out for me. Yeah. I think I brought it up the other week on here, actually, funnily enough. Yeah. He's the one person who I think could really benefit from leaving Atleti the most because of his football IQ.
Yeah, well, you talked about it damaging him a bit, haven't you, really?
Yeah, absolutely. It's why Rodri left.
And I think that's the point Klopp is making. And it's kind of the point we were making early in the season as well. If you look at some of the players they brought in, it would be logical to evolve a little bit. But it's not something they've done, and they've
instead they've all got Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. but of course, I agree with you. There's not a right, a wrong, and a right way of winning. And those comments obviously sound a bit weird after you've gone out playing the way you play, and it kind of works. But I can see where he's coming from. And you know what? I quite like. Yes, he sounds like a poor loser for sure, but he's speaking his mind, which I think is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
We have enough managers who just say nothing because they realize not much good will come out of speaking your mind in the press, where Klopp at least is offering something of himself. And you can criticize him for what he thinks, but that's how he feels about it, and that's fair enough.
No one's ever going to agree on the right way or wrong way of playing. You know, some people don't like the way Liverpool play. I saw a lot of people bring it up last night. They were just pinging crosses in. That's all they were doing. That's what people said. Some people don't like what Liverpool do.
Trent Alexander-Arnold put 25 crosses in, which is a wild number.
Yeah, there you go.
Very strange.
If that was under Moyes, I remember Moyes used to do it at Manchester United. They used to say, they ping this many crosses in. You know, if that was Moyes' team, they'd be like, oh, God,
but
it was
to be fair, that was a consequence of Atleti sitting deep and they were struggling to make through. Like, so you have a lot of space in the flanks.
Yeah, I think the Spanish word for that is Alexander Arnold Dependencia. but let's go back to Marcus.
Need a plan B, Andy. Andy Carroll in for next year.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one. Let's go back to Marcus Llorente because it's an extraordinary story. He is not a young guy anymore. He's 25. He's not this promising young player that some of us still think of him as. If we go back again to the Champions League past, we go back to the 2017 final, around that time, people were saying, oh, yeah, they might move on from Casemiro. Llorente is either going to compete with Casemiro or replace him in the next season.
Yeah.
Never happened. And now you get this point where he moves to Atleti for 40 million. This is meant to make him. He's really struggled to find his place in the team. Only 8 La Liga starts this season. No Champions League starts. Mm-hmm. They bring him on to basically stem the flow because Liverpool are just running all over them in the middle because Saul and Koke are having to go out and help Lodi on that Liverpool right, the Atletico left. Mm-hmm. And this guy who you bring in to plug the gap scores 2 goals and gets an assist. It's extraordinary.
It was unbelievable because he had 3 professional goals in his career before then. And he went and scored 2. And I mean, he couldn't pick the better stage.
It didn't look like he saw them coming himself either. He was what was that?
Yeah.
But they were such good finishes.
Yeah,
they were unbelievable. They were unbelievable finishes. And you know, I really, really like his attitude. Always have. He's an unbelievable professional, by the way, Marcus Llorente. Always looks after himself in terms of, you know, the application he puts in after training, before training.
I've seen him walking his dogs. I mean, he looks stacked.
Yeah, yeah. He's a beautiful looking man.
Yeah,
he really is.
There's no doubt about it.
He's very handsome. But yeah, anyway, back to his football. Yeah, he came in, you know, and he's played this very strange auxiliary right-sided role this season when he's come in quite recently, and for him to come in and make that sort of impact was admirable. And yeah, you know, he's Real Madrid boy, you know, but for him to come in and put that sort of effort in, just I think it's testament to the type of person he is. And credit to Alvaro Morata as well, who, if my eyes didn't deceive me, scored a 1v1. The world really is falling apart, and I don't mean by coronavirus. Morata's scoring on 1v1 situations.
But I thought it was interesting that it was for the crucial goal. Obviously, it's Adrian's mistake, but it's also a very clever and quick-witted pass by Joao Felix. I thought the very excellent writer and broadcaster Musa Kwonga made this point during the game, that the thing about Joao Felix is that he's spending so much time off running off the ball that he doesn't look like he's got. He looks like he's knackered when he's in position. When he finally gets the ball in good positions, he doesn't have the energy to burst past his man the way he otherwise would, perhaps. And I think that's like Atleti at the moment in the microcosm. Like, they are a little bit stuck between the old sort of Gabi, yeah, Juanfran way, and the fact that they now have one or at least a couple players who maybe could do more, but they're asked to do so much off the ball that it's tricky.
Well, that's something that they've talked about again and again with Koke, isn't it? But I do think that you can talk about that Adrian fluff as being the key moment of the match. And mm-hmm. obviously there's some angry Liverpool fans who've really got on him and said the difference in the game is the two goalkeepers. I think that's a little bit of an oversimplification of it personally, because anyone could make that mistake that Adrian made. You know, better goalkeepers could make that mistake. And also, I think 8 or 9 times out of 10, you get away with it, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But one of the things that proves, and I thought was Joao Felix had quietly a very, very good game. When the ball goes to him, you're thinking, he's off his line, just chip him.
Yeah.
That's what you're thinking. And he doesn't. He stops it and he makes a reverse pass that catches the defence completely unawares.
He's starting to get that. I mean, I've made this point, and this is why I think when he has played, he hasn't, you know, I think everybody's expecting this.
To be touched by the hand of God when they see him?
The Benfica, Joao Felix, to turn up. It's a completely different thing. And I bring this point up as well. He's playing the Griezmann role, and that's a Griezmann role that Griezmann took years to grow into, to understand. And Joao Felix has just been dropped in and said, okay, you do what Griezmann used to do. That is so, so difficult. It's such a specific role. He's such a young player. He's learning all the time. And I don't think he's been that bad by any means, Atleti. I think he's been very good.
So I just very quickly looked up the tweet here. Musa says, Joao Felix is Kaká, but with 30% of the possession. and I think there's something there. I think it's so hard for these attacking creative players when they have so few opportunities to make an impact just because of the nature of how Atleti play.
Of course, the thing is, when they work out he can score back post headers, then they really will be in business.
Das Ding und der FC Schalke hat es! Schalke ist Sieger im UEFA-Pokal 1996-97.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The other match from Wednesday night was in Paris. We touched on it before. In terms of the actual Paris Saint-Germain performance, I think it showed great maturity. They managed the situation very well.
Yeah.
They were deserved winners.
For sure.
We end up liking them a lot less at the end of it, don't we? And
we didn't like them a lot to begin with.
Okay, fair enough. But when... You know, we'll come back to the performance in a minute, because I do think it merits analysis, and Neymar had his big moments. But when you look at Tuchel's celebrations, when you look at Kazawa getting stuck in amongst the ultras outside, and it looks great on the photos, don't get me wrong, but I do think it's grossly irresponsible. And then, of course, which is far less important, the mimicking Haaland's yoga celebration. I mean, apart from the fact... This is going to make him mad. This is going to make him mad, and he's going to make them pay for it. And he's going to make everyone else pay for it in seasons to come. I'm not worried about him. But why, at your biggest moment for a good couple of years, do you decide to spend it taking the piss out of a teenager who's not even played a full season at the top level? I've got to lean on my good friend Rob Daly's tweet here that says, PSG doing that Haaland celebration for Neymar's goal at full time and in the dressing room is like that thing where you say a joke and no one laughs. You think it's because nobody's heard you, so you say it again. Then someone says, heard you the first time, mate, and you want to die.
Yeah, except I don't think anyone's actually told them to their faces that actually heard you kind of embarrassing yourselves there. No, listen, I thought it was really funny, just not the way they intended it.
What, you mean laughing at rather than laughing with?
Oh, very much so. Because this, listen, Paris Saint-Germain, you say it's the biggest moment in the last couple of years. It's one of the biggest moments of their history, such as it is. Because, I mean, this is a club that in the last decade has had like this extraordinary amount of resources thrown at them by the Qataris. And that's not to win Ligue 1. Like, I mean, Ligue 1 effectively is not a competition anymore unless they have an even, you know, completely embarrassing year and they manage not to win it. I mean, they have managed that a couple of times, of course, but, you know, under normal circumstances, that shouldn't be possible due to the financial advantages they have. It's all about the Champions League now. So this is what the club exists for, almost. This is what all those resources have been put into. And they keep, like, finding new and more embarrassing ways of going out. Like, and it's become this sort of global laughingstock almost, the way they always mess up. Finally, they didn't. Like, they had, as we've talked about again before in the pod, they had a sensible transfer window for once and filled the spots in the squad that needed filling with sensible rather than glitzy signings. And we're seeing that they look more solid. Like you say, it was a very accomplished performance, very good tactician in charge. They're kind of looking like a proper football team now. And they really come up against it in the Champions League. And for like one of the first times in their history, they managed to not fluff their lines and actually get the job done. And in that sort of moment of triumph, and it really is a breakthrough moment for them, I think it could be in sporting terms, after everything that's gone into it, their first instinct is to take the piss out of a 19-year-old kid who was like 15 months ago was playing in Norway. Like, it's a bizarre behaviour. It's very strange.
It really is. But let's look at how Paris Saint-Germain played, and let's look at Neymar, David, because he finally had an opportunity in these last two games to make a difference to Paris Saint-Germain at this level. And this is what he was bought for. There's no point skirting around that. If we go back and think how he dragged Barcelona through that Paris Saint-Germain tie, those years back, he can do this. If we forget all the shit that surrounds him, this is a guy with iron will who can pull it out at the biggest moments. And until last night, and maybe some people forgotten that a little bit. Like, the celebrity obscures the substance.
Yeah, which is a shame, because, you know, you've got to look at it in the past, you know, what, 5, 6 years, he's probably the one player who has got closest to Messi and Ronaldo in terms of the level.
But it's not just the ability, is it? It's the strength of will to pull the team on your back. I think it's underrated. Make it happen.
It's an underrated quality. I think he's quite a tough kid. I think, honestly, I really, really do. And he's shown it so many times. He showed it to Barcelona as well. I think he really toughened himself up under Luis Enrique. He was incredible. And Luis Enrique loved him. And Luis Enrique doesn't really like many people at all. And the fact that Neymar showed that, again, I keep using this word on this podcast, grit. He is capable of showing that, and people do forget it. And if you look at his performance over the two legs in this tie, he wasn't that good, but his direct involvement in the goals was there. Mm. So when he does want influence, he can do it. And he's just an unbelievable player. He really, really is. But people do forget it because of, all, like you say, all the shit that goes on elsewhere. But
I think you guys are being very charitable describing it as like the celebrity that surrounds him and the shit. I mean, it's his behavior, right? It's all the theatrics.
Yeah, he doesn't help
weird
himself.
Weird trips to Rio, the sort of pulling out of the games when it suits him.
Yeah.
It's no one else's fault.
Okay, he doesn't help himself. Yeah, absolutely.
All the sporting stuff is correct. Like, he is phenomenal. And when he's been on the pitch for Paris Saint-Germain, he's been great.
Yeah, but it not only obscures his ability, it obscures his will to win and the fact that he really puts in a shift as well. Mm. I mean, that's something that people never underline about Neymar, that determination, that grit, that bloody-mindedness. And I think you touched on it there, David. Those, when he was at Barcelona, those big games, it was fly or die. Either he was going to make it happen or get himself sent off doing it.
His teammates like him. Wherever he's gone, his teammates have loved him because of his attitude and his ethic and how he G's everybody else up.
Yep.
Yeah, so, tell us a bit about how desperate Messi is to have him back at Barcelona, because it's kind of made Messi, who we don't really expect for... to have public pronouncements. Mm-hmm. There've been more and more recently, mm-hmm. maybe as he becomes face to face with his football mortality, gets a little bit antsy and says, look, this stuff has to happen now. Come on, come on, come on. But one of his key things in the last 8 months to a year has been, I need Neymar back here.
Yeah, I mean, when he first came to Barcelona, there were concerns about what his attitude would be like. Oh, is he going to be acting like the celebrity, acting like that? But when he focuses on his football, when he's in training, his application is incredible. His teammates love him. His coaches love him. He works very, very hard. He's the sort of guy who puts in the same amount of effort in training than in a game. And people probably don't think that because they'll see his Instagram, they'll see, you know, he's at Fashion Week, they see he's dyeing his hair, things like that. But Messi has always wanted him back. All the other players, Busquets, I mean, I'm talking about the real Barca boys here, have always wanted him back. And this is somebody who isn't, you know, La Masia DNA or anything like that, but he's somebody who gets Barcelona. He's somebody who, I think, when other players are not performing, like you said, he stepped up in that tie for Barcelona. And that's the sort of thing that he's capable of doing.
Is he back there this time next year, do you think?
I think everyone in Barcelona would love him to be, but I just don't think it's going to happen. I think all the money's going to go for Lautaro Martinez.
Yeah.
He's the number one priority.
Right.
So I think they'll go for him. If they don't get him, they'll maybe say, oh, okay, you're going to do this little deal on Neymar.
Do they even have the money for Neymar, though? Because...
they have the money.
Their finances are not great.
They have the money for one big signing. They'll make one big signing, 100 million plus signing.
The problem is they're kind of bound to Coutinho and Dembele to... enormous financial dead weights who they're going to struggle to shift, aren't
and
they?
And you know what? They still want De Ligt as well. They're going to try for him again, even though he's at Juve. They still want him very much so.
Lars, can I ask you to move it on? Were you disappointed in Dortmund?
A little bit, yeah. I think there's a factor we've not mentioned because obviously it does pale into insignificance next to all the stuff that's going on. But there are sporting, I think, consequences to not having people in the stands. Like, I think we saw in Serie A at the weekend, I think it favoured Juventus to an extent in the big derby because Inter's game is all about energy and running and passion and all this, whereas Juventus are a little bit more technically accomplished maybe and a little bit more clinical in the way they play.
I thought you were going to say maybe they're just frightened because they can hear Antonio Conte shouting at them.
I mean,
that
is also
it could
a thing.
Be that. I mean, that was the thing that everyone in France talked about, about Marquinhos, who everyone knows is a leader.
Yeah.
The ultras at Paris Saint-Germain absolutely love him, but it felt quite revelatory to find out how much he talks during a game and exactly what he says.
But nowhere I was going with this was that, of course, PSG really did everything they could to try to get the fans in the stand, even having like the entire stadium covered in anti-back or whatever they did. They had like a company in to clean the Parc des Princes, which is probably not a bad thing to do anyway. But no, in the end, on the day, I do wonder if it favoured them a little bit, because, you know, they are a team who have this recent history of just again and again and again crumbling under pressure in the Champions League and just making it slightly different, breaking the pattern. You're not in front of the fans. I think it taking a little bit of the pressure off them, the sort of visceral feeling of, oh, here we go again, like we've experienced this before, like this has gone wrong in the past. Like just making the, because it was a very sort of otherworldly and odd atmosphere, having this crucial game in their history happening with no, it was very strange, but I do think changing the setting maybe helped them a little bit.
One German club who did get it right and emphatically got it right, I guess you could say one of two surprise quarterfinalists, Leipzig. And, you know, we've heard a lot about Tottenham, their end of era, and
to be fair, they had no players,
etc., etc.
Entire lineup of kids, and you know, it's hard for them to do anything.
Lucas Moura, Lo Celso,
walked off the pitch.
Yeah, really, there's no point having this game. Really.
Surprised that they didn't have any catering staff in the defense, really. Nevertheless, we talked, David, a while ago about whether this would represent some sort of changing of the guard in European football coaching between Jose Mourinho, who I think you said in terms of, I'm sorry if I'm misquoting you, but I share this opinion, if he was a busted flush in Champions League
he's done at the top level, never mind just Champions League, Premier League, I think he's done.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, just to reiterate that from a couple of weeks ago.
No, I'm happy to die on that hill, and I think I'm going to have a lot of people dying with me on that hill. So
yeah, I think you. I'll join you. It's a comfortable place to be. But I think let's not look at him. Let's look at Julian Nagelsmann, who, you know, there was the possibility for them to wobble, to get a bit of vertigo. He's got a young team. He's still a young coach. There's nothing he could have done any better, really, over these two legs, is there?
Absolutely not.
What an effort.
Yeah.
And they've had their injuries too.
Yeah, absolutely. Youngest ever coach to win a Champions League knockout tie, 32.
It's incredible.
So there you go. And it's marvellous. He really is. He probably is the biggest managerial prospect in world football.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, there's some good managers out there, but I think he's definitely the one that you look at. I brought it up a few weeks ago, but I'm really in admiration of how he gets his ideas across to players. And also, you look at the number of players that he's converted positions for as well, and they've been equally as good there. I think that takes a very, very special coach to give that player, you know, the instructions, the details to make sure that they become accomplished in that position. It's about five or six players, I think, I was looking at that he's changed position of, and they've all performed really, really well there. And he's such a fantastic coach, and his attitude, he's an intelligent guy as well, and the team plays some nice football. It's just going to be great to see where he goes.
It was interesting because in the build up to this, Lars, we looked at them at Wolfsburg last Saturday. They didn't win for the second successive weekend in the Bundesliga. They tried out Nagelsmann tried out Christopher Nkunku at right wing back, and there was part of me thinking he's going full Guardiola. he's just overthinking things.
Yeah.
But to his credit, he didn't do that in this game.
No, which is very opposite to Guardiola. Guardiola tends to do wacky stuff in the big games historically.
Great use of the word wacky.
Yeah, well, it's hard to describe it in any other way. But to be fair, yeah, I do wonder, as someone who has pushed that narrative a few times, I mean, there's an obvious sort of logic hole there, is that we don't talk about the big games where he picked odd lineups and it worked. You know, but anyway, that's a digression. The other thing I think about Nagelsmann, he's a deceptively experienced coach, because he started working as a coach like when he was 20 or something.
There's no overnight success element about it, is there? No, you're right.
Because we're so used to people, like, you give up your career in your mid-30s and you do your badges and you start coaching at that point. Nagelsmann has kind of gone through the same process. He just started much earlier. And I mean, the point's been made before. I do wonder, maybe he has a level of empathy with the players and how they think and how they feel that maybe other coaches who may have been on the other bench in this game does not. I mean, I think that there might be a big difference there.
I mean, Marcel Sabitzer, we've got to have a word for him as well. We always end up talking about Timo Werner for obvious transfer-related reasons when we get into Leipzig. But if you talk about Nagelsmann lifting players a little bit higher, Sabitzer has been one of those. He's been absolutely fantastic. And Rafa Honigstein talked in The Athletic this week about how he didn't want to go there in the first place. When he got transferred over to Leipzig, he's like, oh, I don't want to play in the second division. But actually, he's been there the whole time. It's worked out really well for him. And I mean, he's one of the best midfielders in Europe at the moment, isn't he?
Absolutely, yeah. I think he's purely for his influence alone on the team, it is huge. And the way he stepped up again the other night was just brilliant. He's fantastic to see.
And he's also, I mean, he's played most of his career out wide, so it's interesting to see him be that effectual in the centre. But I guess it's because, partially because it's just his running power. And I think that's a big part of like Nagelsmann's system. You need people who run a lot.
His energy is pretty infectious, I think.
He's a super athlete.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about it. It's interesting seeing Forsberg come on and kind of finish the game off. He's almost a peripheral figure to them now. I mean, it was his first touch, but I think that shows the sort of strength in depth they've got. And when you talk about the club planning, which, well, is exactly where it's fallen apart for Tottenham, those two fallow transfer windows, that's what they're paying for at the moment, above and beyond Mourinho, whatever you think of him. Mm-hmm. Whoever the coach is at the moment, they're paying for those two empty transfer windows. Whereas Leipzig, clearly they're very well funded, but without going out and spending 50, 60 million on players.
Yeah, they're not overpaying for anybody.
They're never going to buy a Ndombele or whatever, are they?
They'll buy the next Ndombele.
Yeah, exactly. Or the one that's fallen through the cracks. Like Patrick Schick had a very bad time. The way he's regenerated under Nagelsmann has been absolutely extraordinary. Mm-hmm. But they've got options because they've planned.
Especially in attacking positions, the number of options that they have got. If a game isn't going their way, how they can change it up, everybody's quite flexible, versatile as well. It's remarkable.
We have to have a word for Atalanta before we leave the Champions League as well, because it's an extraordinary achievement and clearly is the first... Champions League game without supporters this week, it was a bit weird. But if ever a game was stimulating behind closed doors, this was it. And the thing that really got me about Atalanta, you knew they were going to play it, how they were going to play it. They only play one way. But the point where they're 3-2 down, they think, should we just move to kill this game? I mean, that's amazing, isn't it?
No, it is. He did it in the first leg as well. I think he brought in Zapata late on and to try and get more goals. And yeah, I know Valencia's got their problems at the back, but I think to score that many goals at this level over two legs is an excellent achievement. Again, their positivity is a breath of fresh air. You know, all these people who are getting antsy over how Atleti play, then okay, you know, you can balance it out by watching Atalanta. again, there's no right or wrong way to play. This is the great
variety
thing.
Variety is the spice of life.
Exactly, and I think that's the important thing.
I'm just delighted to see Gianpiero Gasperini have this sort of moment in the sun, because I think he's always been a bit of a cult figure if you follow Serie A, and he's had good teams before, particularly sort of when I was a student. This is going to be a little bit sort of weirdly personal. When I was a student, my best friend, he had like a nicer student flat than me, so we got like two sort of reclining chairs that we had in his flat, and we would watch all the football on every weekend. And one of the teams that we really enjoyed watching then was the sort of Gianpiero Gasparini's Genoa side, who were playing the sort of slightly gung-ho 3-4-3 formation.
Oh, like, they were fun
way before it was trendy, where you had like Sokratis for some reason in defence next to like Thiago Motta in midfield, and Umar Milanetto, who the centre midfielder who always looked like he was running uphill somehow, and so it was a really, really fun team of sort of strange characters. And I think they finished fifth one season. I mean, they did quite well, but they were never quite. They remained a cult side that was eventually broken up, and Milito went to Inter, and Gasperini went to Inter, of course, eventually.
Where he got his whole four games in charge.
It was such a shame. And someone who's always had really interesting ideas, and very countercultural to an extent in Italian football, very counter stereotypical, and to see him get these sort of build two Atalanta teams, really, because the first one he did well with, the finished fourth a couple of years ago, was broken up entirely and all the players were sold, and he had to put it together with sort of random bits and bobs from the Swiss league in this sort of strange business, and he's built another incredible team here.
But is that the thing for them in terms of this Champions League success? It gives them breathing space, it gives them longevity, because how it seems to have worked for them is, rather than break up teams, they're not having to sell the Caldera now, or well, they've brought him back, haven't they? But they've been able last summer to hold on to Duvan Zapata. They've been able to continue to pay Papu Gomez. All those things have worked for them. And maybe next summer they get to hold on to Pasalic permanently.
And not only have they made not one, a number of truckloads of money from this sort of Champions League season they're having, But I mean, their wage bill is like the 13th biggest in Serie A. So they don't.
That is worth underlining.
They don't
actually
need that money. I mean, they can take that money and put it in the bank and use it to give better contracts to anyone who might want to leave to entice them to stay, or to use to find, you know, new undiscovered gems in the transfer market. Nothing is like the really extraordinary players here. Like Iličić is like 32 and looks like he can barely run. So even though he scores these amazing goals, I'm not sure big clubs will be lining up to get him. So I think they have a real chance of keeping some of these guys for a little while longer.
Yeah, he's what they would have described as a Chrissy Waddle on the Fast Show. So, in amongst everything that's happening, we had the first Bundesliga game behind closed doors this Wednesday. It was a sort of hors d'oeuvre for the Wednesday's Champions League action, kicking off at 5:30 UK time, to not clash with it, of course. The Geisterspiele, the ghost game. And it was a derby between Borussia Mönchengladbach and Cologne. Mm. And it's a bit like when you were talking, Lars, about the game between the Derby d'Italia, between Juventus and Inter. There are games behind closed doors, and there are massive games behind closed doors. Mm. I mean, it was really interesting, I thought. It's something that you have in the Bundesliga. You have the referee give an interview after the game, normally to explain a few decisions, which I think is something that people in other leagues would like to see. But it was really interesting to see Deniz Aykutin, who is, of course, one of the most experienced referees in Germany, give his little chat about it afterwards. And he talked to Sky afterwards, and he said something's missing and something's massive is missing. I just hope that this won't continue in the long term. It's really scary, and it's nothing to do with football. The passion's missing, and it's very difficult to concentrate. And it's really interesting to hear a referee say that, because I think sometimes we can all be a little bit guilty, can't we, of thinking referees aren't really people. Exactly. Yeah. You've hit the nail on the head. And the fact is that everyone's feeling it. I mean, it was a keenly contested game. Mm. It was a close game. Once Marc Uth for Cologne had scored and got it back to 2-1, he had a great chance at the end that he could only hit straight at Jan Sommer. And at the end, you did have the Cologne players sort of looking at each other and sort of putting their faces in their shirts and all that sort of stuff. They were going through the normal stuff, and the way Gladbach celebrated, they were going through the normal stuff that they would have done if there were fans there. But it did feel super weird. And for me, this was one of the first games where you thought, this isn't really sustainable, is it, football without supporters?
Yeah, no, it isn't. And I don't think it fundamentally, yes, these mass public gatherings are incredibly bad for spreading the thing. But I think also just having teams and support staffs traveling around the country is not going to be a good way to contain a virus either. So I'm not sure.
Well, the players feel at risk.
Yeah, from a public health perspective, it's not a satisfying solution. I understand the business case for just getting these games over and done with, but it just doesn't feel right at all. And I missed this game, Andy. Having watched this and having followed the Bundesliga very closely as the Guardian Bundesliga columnist this season, I mean, Gladbach are having a terrific season, like 1 point behind RB Leipzig, 2 points behind Dortmund. We talk about them a lot less than those two, probably. Marco Rose in his first year there, we talk about Nagelsmann being a huge managerial prospect. I mean, the Marco Rose hype train is well underway, no?
Yeah, well, of course, he was linked to the Spurs job, wasn't he? When Pochettino went, and it never looked possible to me. But I think when you get a year or so down the line, everyone will be linking him with bigger jobs, and Gladbach can't keep him forever. I really think he's done an absolutely tremendous job there this year. They've got a real playing identity, which they didn't last year. I know they flirted with the top of the league, and they were top for quite a bit during the first half of the season, but they're never a genuine title contender when you look at their depth. When you look at that lack, for me, their biggest lack, because they've got the best goalkeeper in the Bundesliga in Jan Sommer. I think he's absolutely fantastic.
Big shout. Manuel Neuer might be listening to this and he might be coming to your house.
Well, he's angry with everyone. Mm. I don't think one more is going to make a difference, is it? But to me, the one thing they're really lacking is, when you go back to Lucien Favre days, Martin Stranzl, that sort of real, like, old grizzled defender,
yeah,
who can, you know, bring everyone else into line. Maybe that's what they're lacking, that tiny little bit of experience, because they are a really terrific young team to watch. And I think if you go back to the biggest games this season, where they're falling a little bit short, and they're a bit lucky to beat Bayern, even though that felt like a pivotal moment at Borussia Park. They could have been flamed in that game if Sommer hadn't saved them and if Bayern hadn't missed quite a lot of chances. But and they fell a little bit short against Dortmund as well. You felt that, you know, Dortmund, again, I suppose in the image of Atleti, dug in. They weren't always brilliant. They were very, very good in the last half hour, and they controlled the game quite well in the last half hour of that Topspieler last Saturday. But the big thing, and, you know, we never want to talk about luck, because, as you say, Lars, it kind of undercuts our job a little bit if we talk about luck too much.
Much better to talk about theories.
Exactly.
Like a theory.
But me too. But I think a big thing between last Saturday and this game against Köln is Marcus Thuram coming back, because he has been absolutely spectacular this season, and he makes them tick in the final third. Now, talking about games behind closed doors, of course, Serie A has been stopped altogether. Mm. We received the news on Wednesday night that Daniele Rugani, the centre-back for Juventus, has contracted COVID-19. Cristiano Ronaldo, it seems, is not coming back from Madeira until it's
fair enough
safe. Yeah, absolutely. And I think Italy putting a block on it. I don't see how the rest of European football can't follow, because, as we've seen, it's all interlinked. And I think really it's not so much about footballing authorities making decisions. I think it's past that point. I think circumstances will make the decisions for football. And we've seen that with Getafe refusing to go to Milan to play Inter in the Europa League. And of course, Angel Torres, the president of Getafe, said before the decision was made, well, look, if they have to throw us out of the competition or if we have to lose the game, then fine, but we're not going. And of course, in the reverse direction, Roma were coming over to play Sevilla in Seville, but their plane was refused permission to land. And this is something that, as I say, is totally outside football's remit, really. If we go back to Serie A, which has kind of led the way in closing things, it's almost like we're doing a sum up on the season now, because it's very, very hard to see, certainly under present circumstances, how the season in Serie A will be completed. Now, obviously, it's a dynamic situation. There are a lot of moving parts. But it's something that Gab Marcotti has been talking about on Twitter as well. The three possible solutions that have been floated for Serie A. One, that you freeze it as it is. There's no champion, there's no relegation, and the European places worked out on things as they stand.
Mm.
That you stop the season right here and you award the championship and relegation on the present table. Or the third, that there's some sort of title playoff. Now, none of these are even remotely satisfactory, in my opinion. But what are your thoughts on them, David?
I think the NBA led the way last night. I think as soon as one player was found to have that coronavirus, I think that kind of tipped the scales.
Yeah.
I think in football we look at that as well. Rugani, you know, Juve.
Well, you think this has to be the tipping point for football, like Rudy Gobert has been
absolutely
for basketball.
He's in that dressing room. You know, he's coming into contact with the players as well. I think that's it.
It's a small community. Football, like basketball, is a small community. You can't reasonably
ask anyone to accept playing against Juventus now, for instance.
No, exactly. Mm. And you look at the games he played before as well.
Exactly.
That's it. For me, I see that as the only viable solution. I know there's the money aspect, and that's something else, obviously, that I don't have the answers for right now in terms of how the smaller clubs figure out, you know, in terms
This has outstripped that.
Yeah, exactly. The revenue that comes in. Mm. But yeah, for me, that's it. Suspended. I would finish all football all across the board now.
I certainly think all of those three solutions sound like they're tailor-made to make Andrea Agnelli's head explode because finishing it as it is now means Atalanta in the Champions League again, and we know how he feels about that.
But they're going to make the Champions League anyway.
And yeah, exactly. Well, it's very disappointing. I mean, there's still time for Roma to overtake them and all to be good in the Agnelli world.
Surely Roma need to make sixth to get their rightful place in the Champions League. That's Agnelli logic,
exactly,
isn't it?
Exactly. But then, of course, if you have a playoff, as was mooted, then that means Juventus might, you know, in spite of being top, might lose it on some kind of playoff, which I'm sure Mr. Agnelli would not want either. So bad news overall for him.
That's where we get to Belgium or Romania or Ukraine, or they even had it in Turkey for a bit, the championship playoff, which was very exciting, simultaneously very exciting and very unfair. Like, give or take the fact that you're actually, in this case, changing the rules mid-season.
So I don't know if you saw this, but the Maltese FA put out a press message.
Yes.
Saying that, you know, someone had informally been in touch with them, mooting the, making the suggestion that Juventus-Lyon could perhaps be played in Malta. And they wanted to say that we're absolutely not doing that. I think they're onto something. I think all the football for the rest of the season, for all of you who just played in like obscure islands here and there, we could play out the Eredivisie on the Ascension Islands, maybe. Like put, the Faroe Islands, that's where the Bundesliga could go. Just
Well, the thing I would have been in favour of with Juventus-Lyon going to Malta is, I mean, surely you and John Arnarisa would have been anchoring the coverage. Which
amazing times.
I think we all would have been in favour of. But if we look at where we are at the moment, everything really is behind closed doors apart from the Premier League. The season is stopped at the moment in Serie A, and you would expect others to follow suit with speculation. Maybe that speculation has been realised, that the La Liga will go from being behind closed doors to actually stopping when the clubs meet later today.
What's going on in terms of, why isn't the Premier League already stopped? Like, why isn't the preventive, you know, measures being taken? For instance, is it arrogance? Do you think it's money?
You know what? It's really hard to say.
Yeah.
It's really hard to say. I think really it's about government taking the lead, mm-hmm. and that's what I meant earlier when I said, really, if you've got a situation where real events are going above and beyond football's. Mm. Football thinking that it is the world. Football is not the world.
I think if the government, the UK government, does move to a next stage, I think that's when we will see it. Because I think this stage one, they want containment at the moment. So I think if it does move to stage two, then I think that is it. That's going to be everything off.
Yeah.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.